Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I am so excited. Our guest today could not be coming on at a better time in this country and frankly in the whole world right now. We have all kinds of chaos being spread and manufactured division, and people don't really know what they think at this point. And Dr. Andre Archer has a new book out that is really, really important. So thank you for joining me, sir. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
It is incredible pleasure to have you here, because I have thought about this so many times. And then I saw your book, The Virtue of Colorblindness, and I thought, aha, we have to have him on, because the truth of the matter is that we are at a place where a lot of this division is manufactured. It's by design. And I'll never forget hearing that All Lives Matter was somehow the worst thing anyone could say. And you were fully canceled for that. And I thought, where are we headed here? So first and foremost, tell a little bit about yourself and then we'll get into the book.
Yeah, so I'm an associate professor of philosophy at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, Colorado. It's about an hour north of Denver. I've been teaching for nearly, 20 years. My specialty is ancient Greek philosophy. So what I tried to do in the book is to sort of combine that tradition with our founding principle tradition and philosophy, political theory. So, I mean, the book really, there's a lot of threads in there that I do a pretty good job, I think, in tying them together, trying to illuminate some of the issues regarding race that we seem to be confused about.
Yeah. So first and foremost, what was the impetus first? Like, was there something that was going on that you said, you know what, I have to sit down and write a book about this, because we gotta dispel a lot of myths and really kind of find a way to go a different direction?
Well, there wasn't anything in particular, but you know, there were several trends that I think are quite dangerous in terms of Americans really being in this together, this American project. And so when you think about, for example, 1776, 1863, we declared our independence, 1776, 100 years later, 1863, we had a civil war, right? New birth of freedom. But in each of those cases, we were dedicated to liberty, right? I mean, we our conception of liberty grew, right? We were on the right trajectory. I think we've made a lot of progress in terms of our past when it comes to race and slavery. But today in the public square, and this really happened, I think, with the death of George Floyd. I mean, these patterns were emerging, but really with the death of George Floyd, you have these academic ideas regarding race that were very pernicious. They sort of jumped out of the classroom, and now they predominate in the public square. So my book is an argument against those individuals who are pushing this racialist ideologies, because, I mean, ultimately, it's antithetical to who we are. And we have to move forward in terms of being colorblind. Now, it's aspirational. Yep. But we're getting closer and closer. But what you hear now, both in the primary and secondary levels, post-secondary, as well, mainly in academia, is that we should always be conscious of race, always, because there's white structures that in fact are against people of color, African Americans in particular. I find that to be bogus and bunk and just simply antithetical to who we are as Americans.
Yeah, and it's so important for people to speak out. Recently, I had on somebody who's been a champion he's in his 80s, Ward Connerly. He's been fighting against affirmative action for decades, literally. And then there was a decision on affirmative action and everyone went crazy. And he came on and he was explaining like what the problem was, why he'd been fighting it for decades, you know, why even in his 80s, he still looks at this and doesn't really understand how it hasn't moved to a level of honesty. So what was your thinking when that decision came down? And did you feel that that was a positive move in the right direction, or what actually went through your mind? Because this is part of what you talk about as well.
Yeah, no, I think it was the correct decision. And I think that finally we can you know, we don't talk about it much, but we can start to take people of color, African Americans, seriously. I mean, I think that there's an assumption that if we start African Americans at the same level that others start, they're not going to be able to compete. So there was a lot of condescension in those public policies, especially affirmative action, and it did a lot of damage, not just in terms of the expectation that Blacks themselves have of themselves and the young, but also the fact that white Americans should see African Americans, and I think most do, but they should see African Americans as equal in all respects. And so even Frederick Douglass back in the 19th century said, well, you know, if there are certain Black Americans who can't survive because of whatever reason, you know, that's unfortunate, but that's how life is. Of course, we want to make everyone equal before the law, and we can do all that we can to do that, but we're not going to discriminate in order to supposedly make African Americans equal, right? We can do that without discriminating against other groups. So I think that historically, there's been this tendency to be generous towards African Americans, right? But we have to talk about being just, and being just does not require discriminating against others for the sake of Black advancement. So I think the decision is a good one. I do think that that entitlement attitude that was created due to these public policies will take time to uproot, but I think it's a good start, and I'm glad that ruling happened the way that it did.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the switching out from equality to equity. When you hear the word equity, what does that mean to you? And what is the difference? Because a lot of people did not realize the switch that happened with diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how different it was in definition and in goal.
That's right. I mean, I think with the Bakke decision, I mean, equity became sort of a way to supposedly correct for the past. And so when you do that, and this comes out quite clear with anti-racism, Kendi in particular, as well as Derrick Bell. I talk about Derrick Bell. He's not well known. But they argue if America is systemically racist and we have these power structures that are designed to privilege white Americans at the expense of people of color, Black Americans in particular, then we have to discriminate on that basis in order to bring up Black Americans. And you do that by discriminating against others. That's the idea of equity. And even some of Kendi's other writings, he has this hypothetical constitutional amendment in which those who do not practice anti-racism will be barred. Their civil rights will be barred. And I mean, of course, it's absurd, but I mean, it just goes to show you the type of thinking that's at stake if we continue to go down this path. So I think equity is the opposite of the American project, the opposite of what Martin Luther King Jr. fought for. It's the opposite of colorblindness, because it specifically privileges race. If you talk about privilege, it privileges race in a way that's just pernicious. But that's different from equality, right? That's different from liberty. I mean, our country was founded in liberty, right?
Yeah.
And so we've done a lot. We have more to do. But I mean, for the most part, everyone's treated equal before the law. Nothing's going to be perfect.
Right.
But we start from the same position in terms of the law, our family circumstances, our physical characteristics. I mean, that's out of our control. But I think our system is still designed for those who work hard. They play by the rules, they can succeed. And so I think that's the true idea or the definition of equality as opposed to equity. Equity's bad, equality's good.
Yeah, and you know, this entire regime that's in power right now, they've inserted equity into an all of government plan where it is everywhere. And people, I just think that not enough people are really looking at the switch there. It was covert to many people when suddenly, and they're reading the word equity and thinking that it's equality, and people are thinking, well, didn't that happen in 1964? Didn't this all go down? What did Martin Luther King fight for if we don't really have that? And then you had this, not to be political, because this isn't really political, it's really more on a spiritual and a different level, but Joe Biden had said that George Floyd was more important than Martin Luther King in a speech one day. And I thought, oh my God, where have we, what has happened here? How do you feel about when that's said? To me, you know, to me, when I look at all of this, I just think, you know, where is the Black community when they hear something like that? It's so discounting of everything that's come before.
Yeah, it's condescending and it's offensive. And I agree with you. I mean, there are a lot of Black Americans who get offended by that. But of course, they tend not to be Democrats. I know, you know.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily political, but, you know, those individuals like myself, I mean, we left the Democrats. Well, I was never really a Democrat, but those ideas are condescending. And sometimes I think that maybe ultimately they think that Black Americans are not capable of the type of agency that other groups have. And so I think you get a lot of condescension there. But ultimately, people have to speak up. I mean, I have a chapter in the book at the end called Comfortable Racism. And basically what that is it's middle class discomfort with the issue of race mixed with anti-racism. And so a lot of middle class people, a lot of white people throw their hands up and say, hey, I'm sick of this issue. Let Kendi teach our young what,
exactly.
You know, at least they'll learn about the past. But that's completely wrong, because that's where you sort of smuggle in that idea of equity that affects every aspect of American society. And that's sort of supercharged now. So again, with George Floyd, but with this administration, every facet of government policy now is designed for equity and inclusion. And basically what that is discrimination.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, many Americans hear anti-racism and it sounds innocuous, as if, you know, of course we want to fight racism, but they don't get that this is just the opposite. It's not treating everyone equal or aspiring to. It's selecting winners and losers, victims and victimizers. And it pits us against one another in a way that's quite dangerous if we continue down that path.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing that I said in the very beginning of when people were saying, well, I think all lives matter. And then they were like canceled. They were shamed. I have a friend actually that got called to some of these big corporations now have DEI HR departments just for this. And she had gotten called into the office and got in trouble because she had said in a meeting that she didn't see race. And she's an immigrant from Poland. Escaped communism. She's like the least racist person I know. And she was crying. She said, they told me that I'm a racist because in a meeting, you know, and it was somebody that worked for her and kind of had issues. And she was trying to like egg her on to say the wrong thing. And that's the other thing that you're talking about, is that people are afraid to just stand in their truth, that right. That's how they live their lives. They don't think about that. And you're trying to make me think about that. So there's also an entire like group of people that have been hired by institutions and academia to kind of be the racism police. And it's very dangerous and it's scary. And that is something I think that is one of the biggest problems, is it's not so much that people don't want to speak up. It's also that people know that they'll be punished.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's rather tyrannical. And the case that you just mentioned of a friend, I mean, that's obnoxious. I mean, of course, we're aware of people's appearance, perhaps even their ethnicity, their color. I mean, of course, that's common sense. But what we should not do is to assign some type of moral merit
right.
to color, right? Black people are good. Black people are victims. White people are bad. White people are victimizers. That's what I mean by being colorblind. And today what we do is we put people in boxes based upon race. Now, people say, well, that's naive to be colorblind. It's simple to be colorblind, but I would say it's complex. It's difficult because it's easy to judge someone by their appearance, by their color. That's easy. The hard part is at least to try to see them as individuals. And then based upon their actions, we can determine whether or not are these good people, are these not so good people. That's the tradition that I'm discussing in terms of our founding and what influenced Douglass. And then, of course, MLK sort of embodies that in terms of being judged by the content of our character. So this idea of colorblindness is not naive. It's quite philosophically robust, and it's quite doable. We can be colorblind as Americans. And I think most Americans understand that it's intuitive to not judge, if you will, a book by its cover, right? Yeah. To get to know an individual, because now let me back up. So let's say we argue, just to take an example, girls play with dolls, guys play with trucks. I'm just generalizing.
Right.
Now, of course, there are individuals who do the opposite, right, from each of these groups. Now, yeah. If we were to say you have to play with this particular thing because you're a girl, if you're a boy, that's when it becomes dangerous. That's when it becomes equivalent to judging people based upon their color. Yeah. So, and maybe that example, I mean, today, as you know, that example might not even, there are people who argue, well,
yeah, exactly. Boys and girls,
what is that? So I do think this idea of being colorblind is something that we do need to speak up about, because really the people who think the way that we do, and I don't think we're saying anything exceptional, and once upon a time, it was common to be colorblind, or at least to aspire to be colorblind. Right. Now it's antithetical. Yeah. And so I think if more of us would speak up and push back a bit, and I think that's starting to happen.
Me too.
I think things would change in a radical way. I really do.
I do too. And the other thing that happened too from the George Floyd incident was an entire movement. First of all, if people were looking at that time into the Black Lives Matter movement and who was involved, a lot of Weather Underground people inspired that. And then after that, had you gone to their website in the beginning, you would have said, what does this have to do with anything they're talking about? Straight up Marxism. But then what also happened, and this is where I think the Black community has been standing up and speaking up, and I see it more and more, especially where I'm from, New York City, is everything that came from that, the defund the police, the no bail, no jail, the treating people that committed crimes as victims, all of these things that have happened have hurt the Black community, it appears, far more than almost anyone else. So these people that came in with this whole movement off of the George Floyd, which really kind of started with the Trayvon Martin, and it just evolved. But after that, it was like what they were doing was actually most harmful to Black children in the inner city, from what I can see and people I've talked to. I went up and spoke at something in Detroit with a lot of people in that community that were saying the same, that what these reforms that came out of that really hurt the people that they pretended that they were really caring about. Did you see that as well? Do you see that?
Oh, exactly. I mean, the prosecutors not prosecuting. I mean, after the death of George Floyd, I mean, it was just absurd. I mean, I'm in Denver, Colorado. And I mean, we've gotten the same sort of effects of those policies, and they're starting to change. I mean, local governments are starting to push back on some of those changes because, communities of color in particular are being affected. And this is especially the case when you talk about the family. With BLM early on, I don't know if you remember, but they talked about how the nuclear family is sort of a white construct. Yeah. And what need is there for a father? I mean, Black Americans have survived slavery with a single parent or a grandmother and a mom with several kids, et cetera. All of that is absurd when you look at 70% of Black children are born to single mothers, basically. And I mean, you can't have these different iterations of the family and expect the children, the young, to flourish.
Yeah.
And so I have another chapter in my book that addresses this. And essentially what I argue is that destruction, that lack of family within the Black community has done so much in terms of making the young in the Black community susceptible to a lot of these racial ideologies. I think if they had intact homes, now, no family's perfect, but I mean, if we at least put an effort into creating families that are stable, mothers and fathers, I think a lot of these racial ideologies wouldn't find a fertile ground, if you will, within this particular group. I do think the family has a lot to do with sort of the impetus behind being susceptible to BLM and a lot of these racial ideologies. So I think the family, a lot of these prosecutors that don't prosecute, no bail, all of that has contributed to a lot of strife within the very community that presumably they were designed to help.
Juvederm is a luxurious, toxin-free skincare that actually works. Not only do we take the toxins out, we put the most powerful nutrients in. All of our products are an effective way to detoxify, replenish, and protect your skin. Our toxin-free, natural ingredients provide real results without compromising your skin's health. Unlock the secret to beautiful, healthy skin using this synergistic skincare system. It's never too late or too early to begin living a more beautiful life with Juvederm. Natural, healthy skin.
Head over to the MelKayShow.com partners page and get a 10% discount now.
You know, there's also the other thing of the this entire movement has really, really changed the face of entertainment and commercials, sports. I mean, everywhere you go. And what they're saying is we want to make it look more like America. Well, when you're eliminating, you know, first of all, the demographics in America are not what they're purporting to be. But we are at a place where, and this goes with both movements that I think are both really about Marxism and communism, which would also be the LGBTQ plus movement, kind of aligned with the BLM movement, to kind of force change and force things into the society and into the culture. That is now painting a very not representative picture. And people notice it. You know, people do notice it. They notice it in the Target commercials. They notice it in TV and film. They notice it in, you know, the end zone of the NFL games. And it's like, it's such, so to me, and you do go through a lot of history and different political movements all the way back to like Rome and Greece and all of that. This really is very, I feel like they're using race, especially the Black community, for other means, and yet putting it into people's faces. And I do know people are like, well, that's not really, it's forcing it. It's not organically that's what it's about. So what about the influence and the effect that this huge, and it was a giant shift, I feel like, in especially Hollywood, that changed the perception of reality on a massive scale.
Yeah, no, I wish more people would talk about this. I mean, you know, that's very insightful. I think that Blacks have been used in a way that basically pawns. And I think that there's a certain segment within the Black community that's starting to wake up. But, you know, when you want to change a society, what do? You go to its leading institutions and you make radical change. Now, you can only do that if you do it from a moral perspective, or presumably a moral perspective. So everyone, or at least involved in this change, recognize that America has a soft underbelly, and that is our history with race and slavery. And so what they do is they take advantage of that soft underbelly by trying to push various changes within different aspects of our society. And of course, you see this in Hollywood. You see this in most left of center places.
Yeah.
And you see this with zoning, single family housing. You see this all over the country. And it's all done in the name of people of color, African-Americans in particular. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about gender, obviously, in terms of diversity, equity, inclusion when it comes to people of color. But I think you're absolutely right. What we see on TV often is not the case at all, right? I mean,
all feel like we're being, like, people that are awake to this, it's starting, because the scary part too, especially about some of this stuff, is that they've been pushing this big white supremacy thing, which I have never, I lived in New York City, I lived in LA, I live in Florida now. I don't know any whites. I've never met anyone who is a white supremacist, at least out loud. I believe that they are making up the numbers of this, but whatever the case may be, they're doing everything they can in people that maybe aren't as worldly or educated or been out there to create a resentment and anger that maybe wasn't even there before. Because when I'm watching this and I'm seeing you know, what they've been big on is the S&P 500 hired, you know, so few white people, or, you know, Stanford and Yale, their incoming class is 11%. What they're doing, and I want to talk about who they are, is they're creating a resentment against the people that they're claiming to help, and then rising them up. Yes. Do you see this happening? Because to me, they're saying that there's a white supremacist problem. Then they're pushing all this stuff in, and then they say, look, there's a white supremacist problem. And it's like, well, at what point are people going to start having a problem with being excluded because of their skin color, and that person getting it because supposedly their skin color? This is a dynamic. A, it's not, I hate the word sustainable because the globalists have hijacked it, but it's not sustainable. And B, they're creating exactly what they say exists on purpose, it appears.
Oh, they're exactly creating what you said. And if anything systemic, it's that. It's the fact that there's a coordinated effort to argue that America's filled with racists, white supremacists. And so what can we do to push back on that?
Yeah.
Right. So what we can do to push back on that in terms of those who are arguing this is to radically change society to presumably protect us from these people.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, your traditional Americans should be upset. I think they should speak up. Now, maybe it's easier said than done, but to me, to you, it's as clear as day. It's like a battering ram. And it's not sustainable because it creates resentment. And it creates the very situation that these groups are trying to fight. So I think that I'm doing my best to sort of push back on that in a way that, you know, your average American can see that it's sort of a rigged game. You especially find this at the upper echelons of academia, you know,
right,
places like Harvard, et cetera. I mean, I think these individuals know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
They know who the pawns are, who the in-group is, who the out-group is. And I think they've been quite successful at it. And I'm hoping things are starting to change, but I still think that there's a number of Americans who either won't speak up or they don't see it. But I think we have to at least shed some light on these dynamics and sort of the puppeteers that are sort of playing with all of us.
Yeah. And I think more people like you that go out there and speak out and show up and talk about it, the more people are. Because one thing that is, I think, uniting people is the very clear controlled demolition of our border, which has come into the communities. But you're seeing people in Chicago, in Detroit, in New York, because again, just like with the defund the police movement, what is happening at the border is going into a lot of times the inner city and the communities where there are a lot of people of color living there, and they're doing fine. And now a lot of the services, and this is happening all over the country. I mean, they're putting children from the border that are from God knows where, because it's not just Mexico, it's everywhere. But these are children that it's oftentimes uneducated in their own country. They don't speak English, and they're popping them into schools all over the country at the age that they are, you know, then putting them in there. And there were already problems with inner city schools. Like I said, I come from New York City, so I know that very well. But at the same time, they're also kicking people out of shelters. There, a lot of the services that helped people, especially the mentally ill, people that are sick or addicted, and veterans, all these people are being displaced equally. And I think it's having the effect of bringing the communities that are being affected, Black, white, gay, straight, whatever you want to, whatever religion, they're all kind of being affected at the same time in the same way. And I do see the Black community in many different cities having press conferences, speaking out, because that is, you know, where we can find things that we all agree on is where I think we can start. So what is your feeling about what the border crisis is doing in a lot of these communities that just, you know, came out of the George Floyd thing, thinking, oh, they're all going to help us. They're looking, where's the George Floyd money in my neighborhood? And now there's an influx of all these people. I have to believe that this is a real wake-up call for a lot of people that maybe either didn't get involved or didn't see it. But now that's another angle to kind of help move along what you are talking about here.
That's right. And I hope this is sort of a rallying point for a lot of Americans, because I mean, even here in Denver, I mean, we're getting busloads.
Right.
We're getting busloads, and the mayor, he's he's a new mayor. He's trying to deal with it the best way that he can. I think he's making some mistakes, but it's just overwhelming. I mean, city government, we have to make cuts because, as you mentioned, you know, shelters are being overrun. The public schools are being overrun. And I'm not sure how we're going to handle this. I mean, I think there is pushback starting to happen. And I agree with you. I think, you know, there's something common that we can all subscribe to. And what's so interesting about this is, you know, you hear a lot about replacement theory. I don't know about the you know, the conspiracies and that, but I know I've talked to white people left of center who argue we need a change of demographics. We need a change of demographics. I mean, if that's not replacement theory, I don't know
right,
what it
I
is.
Know.
You know, and so, you know, I think, you know, there's a concerted effort to make changes in the American demographic in a way that's quite dangerous. And when you think about all the gotaways, millions, right.
millions,
and
children, we don't know where they are either.
That's right. That's right. And so I think between anti-racism, DEI, you know, unless things change, I think we're in for a rough road ahead. But yes, I think at least this issue, if we can unite around this issue and then expand out,
yeah,
I think we can see some change. But I'm hoping it's the case. We don't start fighting about this issue regarding immigrants, because I think that's a key point in terms of getting people on the same page, or at least those who think appropriately or properly.
Yeah, I think it's a good place for people to kind of say, you know what, because they throw the same three issues, be it abortion and a couple other things at us every single time, when there's thousands of places we can agree, and we do all basically forget your external, your internal, your God sense of right and wrong, kind of aligns mm-hmm. with a lot more people than they want us to think. Now, one question that I've always had is about leadership, because the fact that, you know, people like, I mean, less Jesse Jackson, but still Al Sharpton. Again, I've been very critical of the Congressional Black Caucus, who have all been in there for decades. Many of them, they are all very, very wealthy. They don't go anywhere, and yet they get elected again and again and again. And this is all also in local places. I don't know if it's because the Black community has been encouraged not to be political or be involved in politics till it was beneficial or what. But to me, if I was somebody, especially a mom or dad who just went through all this stuff, and I'm looking at, you know, the Maxine Waters and the Bernie Thompsons and all these people telling me the same things over and over again, you got the whole new squad out there. I mean, to me, it's coming through as totally disingenuous. And then you look at, well, what have you done? So to me, I'm just hoping that more people in that community start questioning their leadership that they're apparently supposed to keep electing. I mean, we don't know if the elections are real or not, but we need new leadership in that community. I mean, these people have if you look at the salaries and the wealth of these people that have had those seats in that Black Congressional Caucus, it's really shocking compared to the average constituent that they claim to be representing, and yet they stay there again and again.
Yeah, there's always been a disconnect between the elites, the supposed leadership, and the masses. I mean, in the Black community and many other communities, white working class community, you know, Blacks make up, what, 47.9% of the American population. I mean, these people in Congress, they represent very few Black Americans, or at least their interests do not align, right? So, I mean, you know, there's lots of groups that argue the opposite of what we're getting with the Congregational Black Caucus. You have Project 21, Woodson's group. Have Blacks Against Immigration or for immigration reform. So, I mean, you have a lot of groups out there that are putting up the good fight. But the difference is that the legacy media, those who are in position of power, only uphold certain voices within the Black community. So it gives the impression that this particular community is in lockstep with their supposed leadership, and it's not the case.
No.
So, I mean, I think there's a recognition that these individuals, people like Sharpton, I'm not sure if he's even effective anymore in terms of his supposed leadership, but these individuals aren't as credible as they once were. They have small sort of a cohort of individuals who maybe listen to them, but I would say for the most part, you have, you know, Black Americans who are trying to do the right thing. You don't necessarily hear from them,
right.
But I'm trying to give them a voice in a way that others have not. So, you know, all is not lost.
Yeah. And when you look at it, though, you see like a lot of most of the people that are around these people when their cameras aren't on are white academic liberals. This goes back to the Weather Underground, which I have done plenty of shows on how their influence has really been felt, especially in the Ivy League world. But at the same time, we have to remember that all of the elections are suspect to me at this point. But the other thing is that there are many groups out there. And I just want people watching this, especially if you are in that community, to go seek out, you know, Woodson's groups and other groups, because what is happening is that these people have so much wealth and power behind them that they continue to be in this, that their spotlight is on them. And then you're not seeing all the other people that might actually help your community. Because the one thing that I kept saying, especially when I did that event up in Michigan, was the Black community should be asking the Black Congressional Caucus to do a investigation into where the billions of dollars that was raised for Black Lives Matter actually went. If that was really their mission and they weren't using that as kind of a protection racket rather than, you know, that's what they were there for that. That should be their job then. And so it's again and again, but I do see a lot of people coming out, and we have to really encourage people to run for office against, you know, on all levels. It's not about Black and white, but the people that have been there forever are just want to keep the status quo. So nothing's going to change if we continue to go down that path, because it's very disturbing to watch the Democratic Party vote in lockstep on everything. When you know go ahead.
That's right. I do think we can have sort of a two-pronged approach. And I think that, you know, with leadership, with the elite, because that's what they are. I mean, you know, we need to get the right people in positions of power. But I think what would be more powerful is sort of an organic sort of grassroots approach, both white and Black. Black working class, white working class, Black middle class, white middle class, to sort of push back on these policies and to hold these supposed leaders accountable. I think, you know, over the dinner table, you know, things like we're doing, that's going to initiate the sort of change that's going to be enduring. Right, because politicians come and go. I think they turn to the wind depending on where the money is.
Yes,
but exactly. I think if we have an organic approach that is filled with information, and the sorts of arguments that we're making, and the sorts of arguments that I discuss in the book, I think that's going to be the sort of change that we need. And so, parents, but not just parents, just concerned Americans who are aware, you know, not so much academics, but just people who are plugged in and are aware of the trends that they're seeing and they're troubled by it. I think that's going to be the true change.
Yeah. And I also think that we're at a place where most people look at left and right, Republican and Democrat, as one and the same, that we've been deceived on a grand scale, this illusion of choice. I think what local action and getting together in communities, starting your own groups that are more about liberty and we the people, and kind of, you know, what the founders did. You talk a lot about Frederick Douglass. I think he's somebody that's been terribly left out. He's been in. But so much of what he said is so important right now, and so could be so helpful in facilitating some of these conversations on such a massive scale. To think about where he was coming from, that he came out and was saying what he was saying is still so relevant right now, which I love about you and your book, because you shine a light on the lessons of then, and had we had leadership that actually took heed to that, and the relationships and the getting together with all of the founders and having a say, it was a really big part. And we can do that now. I feel like we're in that kind of phase, though, this kind of, you know, as scary and as chaotic as everything seems right now, it's also an extraordinary time of change where people can redefine who they are, what they believe, their purpose, get involved locally. A lot of people are waiting for heroes and leaders. And I keep saying, you're the hero, you're the leader.
Exactly.
Find your purpose and passion. And that's what I think we need to facilitate. So let's talk about a little bit of solutions here. First and foremost, it is what you said before, getting together on a, like when I was little, when there were like robberies in my neighborhood, it didn't matter who you were. All the parents got together and they started a neighborhood watch. I feel like we can start like Freedom Watch groups, or there's just so many. So let's talk about some of the solutions, because you have them in your book and people can maybe put them into action where they are.
That's right. That's right. And you mentioned Douglas. I'll just mention this real quick. In 1853, he gave a speech in Massachusetts, and he says, well, a lot of people say, well, what should we do? At the time, it was Negro. What should we do to the with the Negro? And he says, well, don't do anything with us. We just want to be treated in a way that other people were treated. Because there was all these solutions as to or answers as to, well, what should we do? And he says, well, don't do anything with us. We just want, if you see someone, if you see a Black American going to work, let him go to work, let him go to school, treat him fairly. And so I would say that's sort of the beginning, right? And that's the key to Frederick Douglass, I think, in terms of one of his main messages. But the other is the principles that define our country informed his way of thinking in a way that's quite extraordinary. And so what I try to do in the book is to make those principles concrete. Now, there are other solutions in addition to those principles that unite us or should unite us. You know, and I mentioned some of this in the book, and perhaps my next book will flesh out some of these ideas, which is what if we had sort of a national service in which it brought Americans together in a way that we come into contact with both working class, middle class, upper class, in a way that we don't have now. I mean, typically you go to college and you come into contact with people that you don't normally come into contact with. And I think that's positive. But, you know, what if we had something along those lines?
Yeah.
And you know, it would be predicated on the principle of liberty and, yes, and our founding principles. That would be one possibility. The other possibility is something that you mentioned in terms of just at the local level. You know, what if we had, you know, reading groups or groups, right, that we sort of got together and we talked about what unites us as Americans, but just locally, what unites us in terms of our communities.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be helpful. I think it would be helpful for parents really to get involved with their local schools in terms of, even if they don't have children, just to get involved with the local school board and to offer another voice to a lot of the policies that are being advocated. So I think there are many things that we can do depending on our locality, but I think we have to get engaged. I think ultimately that's the takeaway, or at least I think that's the beginning of the sort of change that I would advocate for.
Yeah. And that's the best thing we can do. But honestly, I feel like right now they've created so much chaos. I'm a believer that we're in a manipulated color revolution of sorts that have happened. But that also is a great time for people to come up with solutions. What you're talking about, my mother's 80. She started a We the People group in her community. Mm-hmm. And so like everyone comes of all colors, of all backgrounds, no religious. And that's what they do. They talk about the Constitution and different amendments and what it means now, or they invite like the people running for different offices on both sides. We can be doing this all over the country. I really believe it comes down to the individual American citizen to decide who and what they are. And like you said, individual liberty is the most important thing for people to remember, that is theirs, you know, in my estimation, endowed by our creator, is a lot of these things.
That's right.
Liberty
and
freedom.
And that's civic republicanism. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, when we talk about our founding principles, that idea of civic republicanism is to get engaged, right? We can get engaged at various levels, but it requires engagement. It requires debate. And in fact, that's what defines democracy, is the fact that the people get involved in a way that they don't in other types of regimes. Right. And so that's the key takeaway in terms of pushing back against ideologies that want to divide us.
Yeah.
We have to come together with the same basic script. And that basic script will ultimately indicate that we have more in common than we have difference.
Exactly.
And so
I think that idea of civic republicanism is one of the keys to fighting a lot of the ideologies that predominate in the public square today. And hopefully the book communicates that.
It does. And I think, like, I honestly believe right now, left of center, probably 15%, right of center, 15%, don't identify with either. And it's a good time to do that. And I think Dr. Archie's book, The Virtue of Colorblindness, if you do have reading groups out there, or you are doing small groups, which I advocate for in every show, and if you are getting to know your neighbors, we don't know what's coming. We really need to re-engage in community and neighbor. This is a great book, I think, for people to do that with, to have the conversation, to invite all different points of view, sit around a table, old school, like they did in, right. When they were doing the Federalist Paper Times and debate. And they didn't agree then. You know better than anyone that to create our country, these men didn't all sit down and agree with each other. They weren't all, oh, yeah, you're right, Frederick Douglass, or you're right, John Adams. Or, no, that's not how it went down. But it did go down that they all agreed on one thing, and that was freedom. And your book is extraordinary, and the timing could not be better. I hope everyone out there is buying it and reading it and sharing it. And I think that it's an excellent, if you do have groups out there, an excellent book for your reading group. So if you could tell everyone, Dr. Archie, where they can find you, where they can find the book, and how they can follow you. Your work is extraordinary. And right now it is so, so important. And the way your demeanor and everything, you're not telling people what to do. You're encouraging to be better.
That's right. Thank you. So, yeah. So The Virtue of Colorblindness, you can get it Amazon, one click, Barnes and Noble.
Great.
You can follow me at Colorado State University, Andre.Archie at Colorado State University. See my webpage, and then that'll take you other places. But I would encourage everyone to get the book, to read it, to engage in it. You can email me. And this has been great. Excellent questions.
Thank you. And do you have a website and a newsletter and all that they should go? And because there's so much censorship and everything right now. And though this should not be a censored topic, you never know. So please do go to his website.
If you go to the Colorado State University philosophy homepage, and then Andre Archie's right there, you'll see some of my stuff, and that'll point you in other directions.
Perfect. Okay, great. So stay in touch. And everyone go over there right now, sign up. Also go to the Mel Kay Show, sign up for my newsletter. We don't know what's coming, but we need all the voices out there that are trying to bring people together to stay out there and be amplified. And Dr. Archie is certainly one of those. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Everyone's been asking me what I've been doing because I am in better shape than I've been probably maybe in my life. And I am now thriving and I have so much energy. I'm going around, I'm doing all these tours and I'm doing the show and I'm showing up at small events and big events. And I'll tell you the one thing that's definitely changed my life is superfoods. Mel Kay superfoods. When I got involved with superfoods in the beginning, I was not eating right. I was not sleeping right. I was not, it was mid-COVID, so I wasn't really doing much and I was doing a lot of things wrong. And then I found superfoods and it has changed me from the inside out. Not only have I dropped weight, which wasn't even the goal, I really wanted to detox. I wanted to help my immune system. I wanted to make sure I didn't get sick while a lot of other people were. And superfoods came into my life and changed everything. I now think about what I'm eating. I don't have cravings. I don't eat late night. There's a whole protocol. It's so easy. It's laid out for you. You take it out of the box. It's there. All your food's taken care of, all your nutrients, all your energy, all your protein. It is an amazing way to change your life from the inside out. Superfoods changes everything. It gives you a protocol. It gives you a schedule. You know what to do. You know what you're eating. You feel great. You look great. Your life's getting better. And the one thing I know is you can go to themelkayshow.com, go down to superfoods, and you can start your journey. Because today is the day. I will tell you, I waited, and then I started superfoods. And within 3 months, my entire life changed for the better, more than I could have imagined. MelKayShow.com, go to partners page, down to superfoods, and click on the link, and you will find a whole new world that will change your mind, change your body, change your life. So when you get superfoods, that helps me and helps this show keep going. I cannot tell you how much it's changed my life for the better, and it will yours too. And enjoy the rest of the show. Mel Kay Superfoods. Get over there now. There's no time like the present. The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it, and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter, and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel Kay. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is going to look like. I'm going to do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm going to bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof. It's cancel proof. It's truth. It's transparency. It's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel Kay, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started.